Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The National Transportation Safety Board has released its preliminary report on a fatal May 13th mid-air collision of two flight-seeing planes in southeast Alaska. KRBD's Lila Carey reports.
The Takwan air pilot operating a de Havilland Otter told NTSB investigators that he was maneuvering the 10-passenger float plane for a better view of a waterfall when he saw a flash from his left side, closely followed by a loud impact. The plane rolled right and pitched about 40 degrees, nose down. NTSB says the planes collided at about 3,300 feet. The pilot told NTSB that he was able to maintain some control as the plane went down. The plane landed in the inlet and came to rest about 80 feet underwater. The pilot, some passengers, and Good Samaritans helped evacuate the plane. One passenger on board the Otter died. The pilot told investigators that he didn't see any potential conflicting traffic on his flight display before the collision. None of the five people on board the other plane survived. The de Havilland Beaver was operated by Mountain Air Service. According to NTSB, it broke up in the air and debris was scattered over a 2,000-foot-long area, including the water and the nearby mountainside. NTSB reports that the right wing of the Beaver showed a series of cuts that are consistent with impacts from a propeller blade. A full accident report, including probable cause, will take up to 2 years to complete. In the meantime, though, NTSB officials have called for greater safety standards for on-demand flights, which include flight-seeing tours and charter flights. Recommendations include implementation of safety management systems, recording and analyzing flight data, and ensuring that pilots receive controlled flight into terrain avoidance training. The NTSB has not yet completed its preliminary investigation and report of another fatal crash near Metlakatla just south of Ketchikan. The de Havilland Beaver operated by Takwan had two people on board. Both died in the crash. With help from Wesley Early in Anchorage, I'm Layla Carey reporting in Ketchikan.
Suppression tactics are shifting on the Oregon Lakes wildfire southwest of Delta Junction. Bob Johnson, who leads a Pacific Northwest team managing the fire, says work has been completed on 8 miles of line heading off the blaze's northern front, and crews have switched to structure protection.
We're moving our resources from the fire line, which is the north end of the fire, up to the communities of Richardson, Clearwater, South Bank, and Whitestone. These communities are no stranger to the fire. They've had the Mississippi fire and the 100 Mile fire just a few years back. The crews we have in there have been there before. They built relationships with the community. They asked to go back in there, and we're really confident that they're going to be successful.
The Oregon Lakes fire has burned nearly 17,000 acres since starting on military training lands April 30th. The fire was human-caused, but managers have not pointed to a specific source. 150 people are working the Oregon Lakes fire, the largest response so far this season. Meanwhile, the season's first lightning-caused wildfires have cropped up in the interior, and a few have been fought. State Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says it's early for lightning.
I think the biggest lightning day we had so far, to my knowledge, is 2,400 strikes. Quite substantial for this time, but the fact that we've got green up already and happened earlier is helpful.
While the cause of wildfires begins to shift toward lightning starts this time of year, Mowry says the Memorial Day weekend raises the potential for human-caused wildfires.
People are cleaning up the yards because the ground's thawed out enough and the grass is growing, so they want to get out and do the yard work. So there's obviously people are burning dead leaves and grass and that kind of thing. People may be taking their first camping trip of the season, their first boat trip of the season. Everybody's out, you know, it's a big barbecue weekend, grilling weekend. So there's just more potential this weekend.
Mowry says state and federal fire management agencies are completely staffed and geared up for the season.
Area helicopters are on contract. Our two air tankers are on contract. The four Fireboss water scooping aircraft. All the crews are, available.
129 wildfires have burned over 21,000 acres so far this season in Alaska. The first dip net opening at Chitna is June 7th, and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is cautiously optimistic about this year's Copper River sockeye and king salmon returns. The forecast is for 1.5 million sockeye to come back, a little under the 10-year average, and a slightly above average king run of 55,000 fish. ADF&G Upper River Manager Mark Somerville says early optimism is based on commercial harvests on the Copper River Delta and sonar fish counts upstream of the river's mouth.
It looks like the run is coming in as projected, and possibly a little bit above projected for sockeye and for king salmon.
Somerville says the fish are also on the larger side.
Fish size so far from the commercial fishery is actually quite good. We're seeing older fish, 5 and 6 year old fish in the fishery at this time. Average weights for sockeye on the 20th of May was 5.7 pounds, which is a really good average size for sockeye. King salmon averaged about 17 to 18 pounds, which seems small for people that are used to fishing king salmon, but on average, that's a good size average for kings down there.
Somerville says river conditions are currently conducive to fish moving upstream.
Right now, the Copper River is at a historic low for this time of year, and the temperature seems to be about a degree, maybe 2 degrees above the average for this time of year. So the fish are probably going to be moving up the river a little bit more quickly than normal. We usually assume 2 weeks passage time from the sonar to Chitna area, and they may be doing that in a week, week and a half instead.
Somerville says that could mean salmon arriving at upriver fishery areas sooner than normal, but notes that by regulation, the subsistence fishery cannot open until June 1st, and the dip net harvest at Chitna can't start until June 7th. The United States Postal Service has announced a new stamp. The United States Postal Service has announced a new stamp series featuring 12 wild and scenic rivers, including the Talikakila in southwest Alaska's Lake Clark National Park. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports.
The river's glacial waters and steep banks make for some of the most magnificent scenery in the region. Now people around the country can catch a glimpse of it in their mailbox. The United States Postal Service published its newest Forever Stamp series this week, featuring a dozen wild and scenic rivers from around the country, among them the Talikakila.
It's really a spectacular photograph.
Megan Richotte is a program manager for the park. She says she was thrilled to learn the series would feature the river.
It's a remote, free-flowing wilderness river that is a wonderful example of, you know, what we protect at Lake Clark National Park.
The river lies near the villages of Port Allsworth and Nundalton. It has played an important role in the region for generations.
The Dinna'ina name is Talikakalatnu, which means stream where salmon are or where salmon gathered.
Karen Ivanoff is a cultural anthropologist with the park.
Talikakila is at the headwaters. It's one of the last places where the salmon spawn.
Having the Talikakila on a stamp, she hopes, will encourage more people to learn about the place where the river runs. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
And I'm Dan Bross.